Chapter 6. The Cure for Romance. Anne passed the spring and summer months in a state of constant happiness. It was another glorious September again when she was ready to go back to school. It was a joy to be back again at the little brown desk beside Diana. She was happy to have a new teacher, too, Mr. Phillips having left for a position elsewhere, one that she truly loved. Miss Stacy was a bright and kind young woman who had quickly won the hearts and minds of her pupils and brought out the best in them. Anne blossomed like a flower under her influence. "I love Miss Stacy with my whole heart, Marilla. When she pronounces my name, I feel in my heart that she's spelling it with an E," Anne declared after her first week back at school. What excited Anne the most, though, was the Christmas concert that would be held in December. She threw herself into the event, despite Marilla's concerns. "It's just filling your heads up with nonsense and taking time that ought to be put on your lessons," Marilla said. "But Marilla, it's going to be so much fun. We're going to sing 6 songs, and Diana is to sing a solo. I'm in 2 plays, and I'm to have 2 recitations, Marilla. I feel so nervous when I think of it, but it's a nice kind of nervous. All I hope is that you'll behave yourself. I'll be glad when all this excitement is over and you'll be able to settle down and focus more on your studies," Marilla said. A short 3 months later, all the Avonlea students were in a state of excitement when the much-anticipated day finally arrived. They decorated the hall in excitement and held one last practice. Some hours later, the modest hall was full to capacity. It seemed as if all of Avonlea was there to support the students. Matthew and Marilla arrived early so they could sit close to the stage, as Marilla was having some trouble seeing these days. During the performances, the audience laughed and cried and clapped eagerly. The concert was pronounced a success, and all of the performers shone. However, none were as bright as Anne. "Oh, hasn't it been a brilliant evening?" sighed Anne when it was all over and she and Diana were walking home together. "Everything went off very well," said Diana calmly. "Oh, your solo was perfectly wonderful, Diana. I felt prouder than you did when it was encored." "Well, your recitations brought down the house, Anne," Diana continued. "And can you believe it? When you ran off the stage, one of your flowers fell out of your hair. I saw Gilbert pick it up and put it in his pocket. You're so romantic that I'm sure you'd be pleased to hear that." "It's nothing to me what he does," said Anne sharply. "I simply never waste a thought on him, Diana." They walked the rest of the way in silence. After Anne had returned home and gone to bed, Marilla and Matthew sat for a while by the kitchen fire. "Well now, I guess our Anne did as well as any of them," said Matthew proudly. "Yes, she did," admitted Marilla. "She's a bright child, Matthew, and she looked real nice, too. So tall, beautiful, and mature. I was opposed to this concert, but I suppose there was no real harm in it after all." "We need to start thinking about her future, Marilla. She'll need something more than Avonlea school," said Matthew. "There's time enough to think of that," said Marilla. "She's only 13 in March, but she is growing up so fast. The best thing we could do for her would be to send her to Queen's Academy, but let's not talk about that for another year at least." It was true that Anne was getting taller and more beautiful every day. Her friends noticed it too. By the time summer rolled around, Anne was taller and prettier than most of them. One fine day, Anne met Diana and their school friends, Ruby Gillis and Jane Andrews, down by the Lake of Shining Waters. Anne had decided that it would be a good day to perform a scene from a poem they had learned in school the previous winter. Since she was the tallest of them, she would be Elaine, the tragic maid who dies of unrequited love for a night and is sent floating down a river to the village of Camelot. In preparation, Anne spread a black shawl borrowed from Marilla on the floor of the boat and then lay down with closed eyes and hands folded over her chest. "Oh, she really does look dead," whispered Ruby nervously. "Now she's ready," announced Jane. we must say, "Sister, goodbye forever," and then kiss her cheek, which the girls did with straight faces. Following this, they pushed the boat from the dock and ran along the bank, expecting to receive Elaine around the bend. For a few minutes, Anne enjoyed the romance of her situation to the full. She felt the sun on her face, the wind in her hair, and then suddenly she felt the chill of cold water on her back. She scrambled to her feet and realized that she was in trouble. The boat had sprung a leak. Where were the oars? They had been left behind at the dock. Anne gasped as she saw that there was just one chance to save herself. As the sinking boat floated toward the bridge, she quickly jumped out and flung her arms around one of the piles. She came to the realization that she was trapped there. She couldn't climb up, and the surrounding water was too deep to attempt to swim to the bank. Her stomach twisted in fear. Her friends, thinking she sank with the boat, were in a panic and had run off to get help. As Anne held tightly onto the pile, the minutes passed by as if they were hours, and she became increasingly anxious. Why didn't her friends return with help? How would she make it back to the bank? She was so cold that she shivered and her arms ached. Anne was finding it too difficult to endure holding on anymore and began to pray and cry at the same time. Then, as if by a miracle, Gilbert Blythe came rowing toward her. Gilbert glanced up and, much to his surprise, was met with a pair of frightened green eyes staring at him. "Anne Shirley, how on earth did you get there?" he asked with confusion. Without waiting for an answer, he rowed close to the pile and grabbed her hand. Anne had no choice but to take it. With his help, she scrambled down into his boat, where she sat, cold, furious, and embarrassed. "What happened, Anne?" asked Gilbert, taking up his oars. "We were doing a scene from that poem we learned in school about Elaine the maid. I was playing her," explained Anne coldly, being embarrassed. "And I had to drift down to Camelot in the boat, but it sprung a leak. The other girls went for help, I suppose, and haven't returned yet. They probably think I'm dead. Will you be kind enough to row me to the dock?" Gilbert obliged. As they approached the dock, Anne got ready to leave the boat. "I'm very grateful for your help," she said as she stood up. As she did, Gilbert reached and clutched her arm. "Anne," he said hurriedly, "can't we be friends? I'm awfully sorry I made fun of your hair that time. I think your hair is very pretty now. Honest, I do. Let's be friends." Anne hesitated. Then she replayed that awful memory in her mind. No, she still hated Gilbert Blythe and she would never, ever forgive him. "No," she said strongly. "I shall never be friends with you, Gilbert Blythe." "Fine, have it your way," Gilbert said sharply. "I'll never ask you to be friends again, Anne Shirley." He pulled away with swift strokes, and as Anne walked away, she felt a stab of regret. She wished she had answered Gilbert differently. She felt like crying, but halfway up the path, she was met by her friends, who were incredibly relieved to see her. "Oh, Anne!" gasped Diana, crying with relief. "Oh, Anne, we thought you were drowned. We ran for help, but we couldn't find anybody nearby. We were so worried about you. How did you escape?" "I managed to get myself onto a pile under the bridge," explained Anne. "I waited there for help, and fortunately Gilbert Blythe came along in a boat and brought me to land." "Oh, Anne, how wonderful of him! Why, it's so romantic," said Jane dreamily. "Of course you'll speak to him after this." "Of course I won't," Anne replied strongly. Later on at Green Gables, when Anne had bathed, changed, and was filling Marilla in on the details of that afternoon's adventure, she had a realization. "I've learned a new and valuable lesson today, Marilla. I have come to the conclusion that it is no use trying to be romantic in Avonlea." Matthew, who had been sitting in his corner reading the newspaper, laid a hand gently on Anne's shoulder after Marilla had gone out of the room. "Don't give up all your romance, Anne," he whispered shyly. "A little of it is a good thing. Keep a little of it."